Welcome to Recovery Talk on AM 600 The Answer. Recovery Talk is brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. Listen today as our expert staff educates you and guides you in the areas of addictions, depression, and trauma so you can be better informed. To be a part of the program, call 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Now please welcome the Refuge expert staff members.
Hello, and welcome to Recovery Talk. We're here every Sunday evening from 4 to 5 p.m. I'm Shay Kimbrough, Business Development Coordinator with the Refuge, a healing place, and your host for this evening's show. Tonight, we are talking about grief and loss. We will be discussing how grief affects us physically, emotionally, and socially, how multiple losses can compound the effects and make it more difficult to return to what we once knew as normal, and resources for those who may be experiencing grief themselves or have a loved one battling grief. Losing someone or something you love or care deeply about is very painful. You may experience all kinds of difficult emotions, and it may feel like the pain and sadness you're experiencing will never let up. Unfortunately, no one is immune to having to experience the effects grief and loss can have on us. But so often, people do not recognize that we grieve for many losses in life, far beyond just the death of a loved one. Although death is among one of the most common losses we recognize, there are many things that we experience in life that can cause us to grieve, such as divorce, the loss of a job, the loss of a friendship, the loss of our health, and even positive life changes such as retirement or a child going away to college. We'll be taking your calls throughout the show at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Comments and questions are welcomed, and we hope to hear from you. Our expert guest this evening is Cheryl Bailey. Cheryl is a licensed mental health counselor, a nationally certified grief counselor, a nationally certified clinical hypnotherapist. Cheryl is also a primary therapist at The Refuge, providing intensive individual and group work with her clients, and she facilitates a specialty grief program. Prior to coming to The Refuge, Cheryl worked for hospice for 13 years as a grief therapist, educator, staff consultant, and trainer. She has a deep understanding of addiction and recovery principles, along with grief, loss, and trauma resolution. We are very lucky to have her here today to share her expertise with us. If you have any questions about grief and loss, I urge you to call in, as Cheryl is truly talented in this subject matter. Cheryl, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Shay. Thank you for such a wonderful opening.
Well, thank you. Cheryl, as a therapist at The Refuge, you work a lot with clients battling with addiction and mental health issues, but it seems to me your passion is working with those clients who are struggling with grief and loss. Tell me what drew you to pursue that specialty.
Well, when I was working at hospice and I began working with the people who are grieving, I quickly realized that I really didn't know a lot about grief myself. I had people who would come in and say they felt like they were going crazy, or their families thought they should be over the loss by now. I began reading more and realizing that in our culture, we really don't talk about grief. We don't educate about grief. And I became more and more interested in it and decided I really wanted to pursue that, and it became my passion.
That's awesome. Now, Cheryl, the word grief can be pretty intimidating to individuals and as a whole to our society, and it tends to make people very uncomfortable. So for those of us who may not have as much experience, you know, and knowledge as you have with grief, tell me, what is grief?
Well, grief is the response to loss, and grief can include emotional, physical, cognitive, and all kinds of different symptoms. But it's the actual response to loss, which is normal.
Okay, and so oftentimes you hear the terms grief and loss together. How do you really differentiate those two?
Well, loss is actually the absence of something that we were attached to. So I often make jokes about, okay, you know, your hair thins, or your, you know, our bodies age, and we grieve that, but it, because that's a loss, but obviously there are major losses and there are minor losses in our lives. Loss occurs constantly throughout, but some of them are easier to handle than others.
So, it's like you said, you know, we experience loss every day, and loss doesn't refer to just death, which is what so many of us, you know, come to correlate that with. But it can be, you know, being rejected from someone, the betrayal of a friendship, divorce, and really even positive life events like your child going away to college, you know, the empty nest. How is the grief process of a loss of a positive life event, such as, you know, retirement or a child going away to college, how does that differ from the loss of, you know, say, a marriage or a loved one, something that has a very negative effect on us, or is it different?
I think it would be different. Some losses we may not really grieve. There may be adjustment, getting used to something. It depends a lot on meaning. If my child goes off to college and I'm happy about that and I'm relieved and I have free time now, I'm probably not going to do a lot of grieving. But if my identity was as a mother and all my energy went into parenting, I may grieve because I'm not sure what to do with myself now and I'm really missing my child. So it depends a lot on the meaning that particular loss has. If it's very positive, we probably will have adjustments, but not the sadness or the anger or all the other more difficult emotions that come up.
All right. So why do you think, Cheryl, that we're so uncomfortable with grief, you know, our own and other people's?
Well, we're uncomfortable around grief. A lot of times we're not sure what we should say. We don't know what to do. We know someone had a loss, and we'd like to fix them and make them feel better, but grief is not really fixable, so we feel awkward. It also may remind us of our own vulnerability to loss. If you lost your child, oh, my God, maybe I could lose my child. So we would just as soon avoid all of that, and we may be afraid that if we open the door to our own grief, it'll overwhelm us. People might think we're weak. So there's just so much fear around that, and we don't talk about it, so we don't even know what's normal and what isn't.
So what are ways that, you know, then that someone could reach out to someone, you know, who is experiencing a loss, that, you know, even in their discomfort, I mean, is there really a wrong thing that you can say to someone who's experienced a loss, if you're coming from a very genuine place yourself?
I think that the best thing you can do for someone who's grieving is to just listen, be there, ask if they would like a hug, you know, be available to listen, just let them know you care about them and you love them. People try to say trite phrases like, you know, he's in a better place, or God needed another angel.
Right.
And from what I've heard, that is not helpful to people who are grieving.
Well, Cheryl, we've got to go to a quick break. Everyone stay with us. We'll hear more from Cheryl after the break, and later we'll be discussing conflicted grief and how the process of grieving can be altered when the loss includes a traumatic relationship.
You're listening to Recovery Talk right here on AM 600 and FM 100.3. The Answer.
The Refuge, a healing place, is a leading treatment program for men and women struggling with addictions, trauma, and co-occurring issues such as depression. The Refuge is nationally renowned for working with its clients to create real, long-term recovery. With their caring staff, you begin to unravel the underlying causes of your issues and gain the strength to accept and overcome them. They take a unique trauma-aware approach to treating addiction and co-occurring issues that emphasizes holistic treatment of the mind, body, and spirit. Their safe private campus is located an hour north of Orlando in Ocala, Florida, and features residential and outpatient treatment as well as drug detox. You can call them for a free confidential consultation, 866-612-6610, or visit their website, TheRefuge-ahealingplace.com. Welcome back to Recovery Talk on AM 600, The Answer, brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. To be a part of the show, call now, 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Once again, The Refuge expert staff members.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk. This is Shay Kimbrough with The Refuge, and tonight we're talking about the ways grief and loss affect us both physically and mentally. Joining us is Cheryl Bailey, therapist at The Refuge. As a reminder, we are taking calls at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Give us a call. Before we went to break, we were talking about loss and how we as a society experience loss on many levels. When these losses begin to build on one another, the effects can be compounded and the coping mechanisms we use can begin to keep us from the very things we need to heal. Cheryl, many times when people are repeatedly hurt, they begin to build a wall around themselves in an effort to protect themselves from being hurt again. How does this armor that we build around ourselves affect a person's ability to heal from the loss, and how can we begin to kind of break through that to allow the things we need to heal back in?
Well, that's a good question, and I think when we do put up that armor, we think we're protecting ourselves from pain, but we're actually also keeping love out. We're not letting people get close to us because we're afraid of the pain. To love is to risk being hurt, but if we don't let people in, we're not fully alive. And I think if we can understand that it's okay to allow ourselves to grieve and work through losses, that, you know, we can be open, and, you know, some of that armor can go. But a lot of times we've taught we should move away from pain, so that's a tendency, but we need to allow ourselves to go ahead and grieve. It's part of being alive.
Right. You know, I think back to, you know, to some personal experiences I've had, and I've had my fair share of grief and loss in the last several years. And, you know, I you go back to a place, I lost my mother very, you know, tragically to cancer. And, you know, you go to this place where life doesn't make sense anymore and nothing is safe. And, you know, there's all of this emotion there. And I think about, as you know, as much as the armor that I put up was there to, you know, to block people out, it also saved my life. You know, it made me able to be able to process that. So does that armor then, do you think, can serve a positive purpose for people? You know, I mean, the brain can only, you know, process so much, I guess, is where I'm going with that. And how do you know when that armor, you know, has been there too long, I guess?
That's a good question, and it's a hard one to answer. I think that we do have to dose our grief, and by that I mean, you know, we go back and forth between, okay, I need to, like, put this away and focus on life and what I need to do. Then there will be times when the grief rushes back in and knocks you right off your feet. But, yes, I mean, there are parts of us that we do need to protect at times. It's when people get to a point of saying, okay, I'm never letting anyone get close to me again. Right. That kind of armor is not helpful. But having quiet time, you know, saying, no, I need some alone time, downtime, you know, not sharing with every person, because not all people are going to be supportive. Right. That kind of thing can be very helpful. It's important to take care of yourself when you're in, especially in the beginning of grief from a loss. We're so raw. So it is okay to just say, oh, you know, I'm not, you know, I need to take a break here and just be with myself. I know, does that kind of help answer that?
Yeah. You know, I was just trying to think of it in context of, you know, we built these walls to protect ourselves, but at some point, it, you know, it becomes the way we cope, you know, so.
Yes. And when it keeps everybody out, that's
right.
When it's a problem.
Right. Now, there are therapists out there, Cheryl, who believe that grief occurs in the five stages. You know, the five stages were identified by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I think, back in the 60s. And she, you know, she identified those as denial and isolation, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. And I know from reading some of your work that this is a huge pet peeve for you, that you, you know, that grief does not happen in five stages. So tell me about how you would then describe the grief process.
Well, Kubler-Ross was a genius when she came up with this initially, but it was more for people who were actually dying than people who were grieving. And newer research shows that while you may experience any of those things that you just mentioned, everybody's grief is different. We have individual, distinct patterns of adjustment, and you know, each of us has our own journey through grief because of lots of different factors. And grief comes in waves. It's more like riding a roller coaster. In the beginning, there may be that impact, that there's the shock and the confusion and just overwhelming emotions. But after that phase, excuse me, you know, it's more individual depending on the relationship you had with the person, you know, how old they were when they died, the circumstances of the death, your coping mechanisms, support system, who's there for you, cultural, spiritual beliefs. Those are all going to play into what makes your grief unique for you. Because people will come in sometimes and say, well, you know, I think I skipped this stage. It's like, no, you know, you're doing the grief the way it is for you.
Right. So is there then a quote-unquote normal grieving process?
No, they're probably abnormal, but normal is just, you know, you're going to go through whatever you go through. Abnormal grieving is when it doesn't resolve, when people, you know, become suicidal or so depressed, or after, you know, a length of time they're just not, you know, functioning in their life, then that would be complicated grief or chronic grief. But normal grief could look a million different ways.
So, at the Refuge, we work a lot with trauma, and we talk a lot about resiliency. So I'm curious, in the grief process, you know, how is it that some of us are completely crippled by grief, and, you know, say a sibling could go through the same, you know, the same exact thing that you went through, the same grief that you went through, or loss that you went through, and some of us are completely crippled by that, and others are able, you know, to really say goodbye and begin to return to what is their new normal?
Well, again, it goes back to the relationship. You know, even within a family, one sibling might be closer to someone than another one is. Each relationship is different. They may have different attachment. The circumstances different. The meaning of the death will be different from one sibling to another. And one sibling may have experienced other losses or traumas or crises that make them more vulnerable and have a more difficult time dealing with the grief than someone else in the same family.
Right. So, Cheryl, when should someone worry that a loved one of theirs may be struggling to grieve with a point where they may need to seek professional help?
I think if they are, if they're feeling suicidal, that should always be taken very seriously. If they, after, you know, and who's to say what a reasonable length of time is, but say 6 months out, they're still unable to function. They can't concentrate. They can't focus. They can't work. They're not sleeping. May have, you know, if they're having intrusive, distressing memories. Those kinds of things would definitely indicate that person needs some professional help.
Okay. And in reading some of your work, Cheryl, you talk a lot about the big three, the guilt, anger, and fear. Can you kind of elaborate for me on that? Why those are the big three and what you mean by that?
A lot of times people, you know, they think of grief and they think, oh, sadness. But oftentimes, anger, guilt, and fear are huge parts of the grief process, especially if the death or the loss has been traumatic. We may feel very angry about what happened. We might even feel angry at the person who died, even though rationally that may not make sense, but we can still be angry. The guilt might be, oh my goodness, I should have done something different, or if I had known this, especially like in suicide, people will go over and over and say, well, why didn't I know this, and I should have done something, and I could have done something, why didn't I do something? They get stuck there. And then sometimes it's fear of like, oh, now I'm alone, will I have other relationships like this ever again? Will this happen to other people I love? A mother who loses a child may feel like, oh my God, what if, I could lose another child and become very overprotective as a result. So these are aspects of grief that come up big that a lot of people, aren't even aware are going to be there.
So is that what you mean when you say that grief gets frozen, that you're stuck in one of these three aspects?
Yes, it can be. It can be. For instance, if a loss was very traumatic, we might get stuck on, the death itself, like how awful it was, or, something that we saw or experienced, and can't move beyond that we can't even get to the positive memories because, we're stuck on how the death occurred. Or there may be so much guilt that we can't, we can't move through the grief process because we just like are stuck on guilt, and that goes on over time. So we kind of call that frozen grief. And a good counselor can help you realize and work through that, it is okay to be angry. It is okay to experience things, but to realize, we can't control life and things happen and it's not our fault, and then be able to access positive memories and find a way to stay connected with the person, if it's a death of a person, that person that we loved.
Yeah, I one quote that was in some of the information you shared with me really stuck out when it said it's maybe easier to blame oneself than to accept our lack of control over the most important aspects of our life. I think it's a society we want to control so much, and that feeling of being that out of control is overwhelming.
Very much so. We watch the news. We know horrible things happen all over the planet. But in order to survive day to day, we think, well, I'm a good person. Life will be okay. We have these kind of assumptions about life. When something terrible, a terrible loss happens, it shakes everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's somebody's fault, then life makes sense again. There's someone to blame. Or even if it's me, at least somehow that means there's control, which really there isn't. We can't control life, but the anxiety that comes with feeling out of control is unbearable. So it's easier. I'd rather blame myself than just think this kind of thing could happen
to
me, to anybody.
So then I also wonder, we only have probably a minute left in this section, but I wonder then, if you need someone to blame, how does that look different than if you've lost someone to, say, murder as opposed to a car accident? Are you able to then make more sense of that, or is that even more out of control?
That's pretty out of control.
Yeah.
And you may get stuck blaming someone else, it's very, can be similar, or you can go in another direction.
Okay, well, when we come back from the break, we will continue this conversation with Cheryl. As a reminder, we'll be taking calls at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. We'll be right back after your local news, weather, and traffic. Stay with us.
You're listening to Recovery Talk on AM 600 and FM 100.3. The Answer.
News, traffic, and weather. Always informative, keeping you connected, updated on the stories that matter. We've got you covered. AM 600 is the answer.
CBS News Update, I'm Harley Carnes. President Obama is looking for partners and for countries willing to put troops on the ground to fight ISIS in Syria and Iraq. On CBS's Face the Nation, House Homeland Security Committee Chairman Michael McCaul of Texas says Mr. Obama appears at a loss.
His narrative was, I am the president to end these wars. And so now when he looks at his legacy, he can't get his head wrapped around the idea of what ISIS is and how to defeat it and what an imminent, urgent threat that it really is.
New York Democrat Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
It has to be participations by Sunnis, by Muslims, by Arabs all across the Middle East. And if he continues to form a coalition to deal with this serious terrorist threat, that is the right approach.
After a British citizen was beheaded, Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott.
This is about taking prudent and proportionate action to protect our country and to protect the wider world against an unprecedented terrorist threat.
CBS News Update, I'm Harley Carnes.
I have a question. Who handles the plumbing, HVAC, industrial, carpentry, and welding for large and small commercial buildings?
That's easy. You're talking about mechanical contracting, and the leader in Florida is W.W. Gay. W.W. Gay has been a licensed contractor for over 50 years.
Well, what about energy management, and who turns off the lights and AC on the weekends?
That's called building control automation projects, and yes, 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 you name it, when it comes to commercial, industrial, and engineering, W.W. Gay self-performs all services. HVAC, plumbing, piping, welding, carpentry, general contracting, steel erection, concrete, and temperature control.
I thought I recognized the name. I see WW Gay trucks everywhere.
WW Gay's expertise includes successful project completion within the public, private, and military sectors. Check out the projects they've done and call the leader in Florida, the name we can trust, WW Gay Mechanical Contractor, Inc. Online at WWGMC.com or by phone at 904-388-2696.
AM 600 and FM 100.3. You want the latest traffic and weather? We've got the answer.
Already 4:33 on this Sunday afternoon. A.J. Davis with your traffic and weather together. Look out for a hit-and-run crash. This is on the south side, Atlantic Boulevard at Mayfair Road. No roadblock reported at this point. Also another accident at Blanding Boulevard at County Road 218 near Middleburg. That's moved to the access road to Publix. No road blockage reported there. Also, Beach Boulevard westbound at St. John's Bluff Road. Busy area. There's a hit-and-run crash there, and the middle lane is blocked. Look out for that. Also, San Jose Boulevard northbound at Hartley Road and Mandarin. There's been an accident with injuries that seems to be in the early clearing stages, but all lanes remain open. The major highways looking pretty good. 95 northbound and southbound. Very good shape now. I-10 at speed limit, east and westbound, and the 295 east and west beltway in good shape. And we're in good shape with the weather. Sunshine mostly now at this point in the afternoon. Only a slight chance of an isolated evening storm. 89 degrees in Jacksonville at AM 600 and FM 100.3. The
Welcome
Answer.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk on AM 600, The Answer. Brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. To be a part of the show, call now, 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Once again, The Refuge expert staff members.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk. Again, I'm Shay Kimbrough, Business Development Coordinator at The Refuge, and we are joined by Cheryl Bailey, therapist at The Refuge, a healing place. As a reminder, we'll be taking calls at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. At the top of the show, we mentioned the concept of conflicted grief. And Cheryl, I read a recent post of yours on the Heart of Trauma blog that The Refuge produces where you wrote, and I quote, "We often think about grief in terms of missing the person, longing for them, and wondering how we will cope without them in our lives. But how do you grieve a parent who neglected or abused you or was mentally ill and unable to have any satisfying or loving interaction with you? What about a parent who was narcissistic or emotionally unavailable at all?" Now, this blog post affected me personally, and I felt like it was very profound. Can you elaborate on really what you mean by that? What is conflicted grief?
Yes. again, a lot of times we think that, you know, most people are going to be sad. Let's take the example of a parent. I'm going to grieve and be sad. But, you know, if my parent was abusive, then I may still be angry about that. Or I might have hoped naively that maybe we would work things through, or my parent might apologize to me before they died, and they never did. So when they die, the grief is like not just sadness, but, you know, it's like, what? You know, and it might even be like grief over, you know, not having the parent that you would have liked to have had, not getting nurturing or whatever that is. And people don't expect you to be angry at someone who died. And we have kind of an unwritten rule, like, you know, don't speak ill of the dead. But sometimes we may be feeling a lot of mixed feelings and not know what to do with them all. And, you know, I like to tell people, it's like, it's okay. You can be angry and, you know, feel the things that you feel and grieve all of it, because it's your truth, it's your reality. And so that's what I meant in that particular blog about complicated grief. Mm-hmm. It's not just about sadness.
And what are maybe some other examples of complicated grief? I know, you know, a lot of the times we can tie that to our parents, but, you know, can you give the listeners maybe some examples of other ways that complicated grief can arise?
Well, let me think. I'm pulling a blank. But anytime, I think that there are just mixed feelings about a loss, when it's more than just the losing of it. And I'm sorry, I just can't think of one off the top of my head at the moment.
You know, I'm very fascinated, really, with that topic. You know, I spoke about, you know, losing my mom, and I remember being at her funeral, and she was actually hospice. She was in our home, and so my brother and I were there through the loss, you know, through the end. And I remember people coming to us and being like, oh, that must have been so beautiful to be there. And I remember looking at them and just wanting to scream and be like, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. Here
I am in this relationship. And my mother and I had always had a tumultuous relationship, you know, and here I am, you know, trying to be her caregiver in our home and you know, battle my emotions of, you know, of anger, of, you know, you were never the mother I needed, you know, and then to be there and know that in her death I was never going to get that. I was never going to get that resolution. And I remember being so angry with everyone who kept telling me how beautiful it must have been.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was like the gall of you to tell me that must have been beautiful, and, you know, in this moment. So, I think it is something as society we don't understand, you know, that
yeah.
you can be angry and sad and still love someone and, you know, and all of these things that can happen.
Mm-hmm. I remember working with a young person whose sibling had died in a pretty tragic way, and this person felt very guilty because not only did they, you know, well, they did miss their sibling, but they, you know, all the attention went to the parents, and they kind of got put on the back burner, and they felt a lot of anger about that. Felt like this, you know, they just became insignificant, and so there were a lot of, but then felt guilty because, you know, they felt like they should be grieving and not angry. So all, you know, that kind of like complex, you know, what do you do with that?
Right. So, you know, at The Refuge, obviously we work a lot with trauma, and we've done several of these shows on trauma and really talking about how trauma is really a thing that kind of shakes your foundation and changes the way that, you know, you view the world. How is the grieving process altered when that loss is attached to a very traumatic memory? So, you know, when you're, you know, trying to honor this person and remember something very positive about them, it's also attached to something that's very harmful to you.
Yes, yes. And a lot of times people cannot grieve. They can't work through their grief because they get stuck, or thinking about the way the person died is so horrific for them that they just can't think about the person at all. so they just avoid the whole thing, or they have intrusive memories about how the person died, and so they can't even remember. I work with a client whose brother was kidnapped and murdered, and she couldn't even remember any positive or any memories at all about him. All she could remember was the murder. And so we had to deal with the trauma first, to work through all the trauma so that she could finally remember who her brother was before that, because, you know, he's not his death. He was a person, and she felt like she then could reconnect with who he was and the role that he played in her life. But before that, I mean, she would go into a trauma reaction because, you know, it was just such an awful event.
And for our listeners who don't know, what is a trauma reaction?
It can be that the person might have flashbacks. They might just have an image going through their head over and over again. They might start to shake and tremble. They might dissociate, but they're not present in their body and grounded, so to speak, because it's just, it's as though it was happening all over again. You know, they feel the shock and the horror of it all, and that's all they can see and feel in that moment.
So when working with someone who has who's experiencing grief and has such significant trauma, such as, you know, the family that you just discussed, that's something that someone should really work on, I would think, with a professional. Do you agree?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. For sure.
And you know, a professional who was experienced, I would think, in both trauma and grief, or would that represent two different therapists? Or,
well, I think once the trauma is cleared away, then most people will be able to, you know, begin to grieve, feel the sadness of the loss, remember the good things. It's helpful that I think somebody's very familiar with grief. Always, that's important. But I think getting that trauma cleared first is the most important part, because that's what's holding up the process. And, you know, oftentimes when people have had traumatic losses like that, they use substances or other types of addictions to numb out the feelings, and then they get arrested there. And we see a lot of that at the refuge, you know, because you can't work any of that through while you're still drinking, drugging, or whatever the addiction might be.
Right.
So you got to get, first you got to get sober and clean, and then you got to work through the trauma, and then you can get to the grief.
Right. I know it's it can be a long process, but I know it can also be a very rewarding process to go through all that.
Very much.
Yeah.
Yes.
So earlier you mentioned that, you know, grief is much like a wave that comes. Is there a way that you know when your grief process is complete, or is it ever complete?
I don't think we ever are completely done with it, because, you know, if we love someone, or, you know, we're going to remember anniversaries, birthdays, there are going to be times when something triggers a wave of grief. Yeah. Years and years later, something, a song, a sound, can trigger a wave of grief. That's normal. It's when it no longer is constantly on your mind, interfering with things. Then, you know, when you realize you can think about the person and remember good things without, you know, just thinking about, oh, they're gone.
We're going to have to take a short break, Cheryl. Listeners, we'll be right back after this short break to discuss some more resources to help those that may be battling grief.
You're listening to Recovery Talk right here live and local on AM 600 and FM 100.3. The Answer.
The Refuge, a healing place, is a leading treatment program for men and women struggling with addictions, trauma, and co-occurring issues such as depression. The Refuge is nationally renowned for working with its clients to create real, long-term recovery. With their caring staff, you begin to unravel the underlying causes of your issues and gain the strength to accept and overcome them. They take a unique trauma-aware approach to treating addiction and co-occurring issues that emphasizes holistic treatment of the mind, body, and spirit. Their safe private campus is located an hour north of Orlando in Ocala, Florida, and features residential and outpatient treatment, as well as drug detox. You can call them for a free confidential consultation, 866-612-6610, or visit their website, therefuge-ahealingplace.com. Welcome back to Recovery Talk on AM 600, The Answer, brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. To be a part of the show, call now, 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Once again, The Refuge expert staff members.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk. We're here with Cheryl Bailey, therapist and grief specialist at The Refuge. Before the break, we were discussing the effects that grief and loss can have on us and how that can be compounded by trauma. And since we've been dealing with such a heavy topic, I'd like to kind of take this last segment to really discuss resources available to those listeners who may be experiencing grief in their lives right now. Remember, we are here to take your calls and welcome your questions and comments. We can be reached at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Cheryl, in your work, you mentioned that we are hardwired to move on, but many people may fear that letting go of their pain is in some way a betrayal to their loved one. What advice would you have for someone who is feeling stuck in this way, wanting to move on but feeling really guilty about it?
Well, you know, our people go away, but the relationship that we had with them, that goes on. That can't leave. That's part of who we are now. And I encourage people to stay connected, continue to talk to the person, even though they're not physically here, but to remember that, what would they want for you? You know, and most everyone I ask that question to says, well, they would want me to live my life. Yes, you know, it's okay. You can let go of the pain, and you don't have to let go of the person. They're part of who you are. So that's what I say about that generally.
So how then can we embrace that grief when we're so terrified of it? You know, we spoke earlier about how much we avoid grief, but so how can we then learn to embrace that? What are some things we can do?
Well, I look at it in two ways. There's sort of the general, and then there's some concrete. I think the first thing is that you acknowledge the reality that there's been a loss and embrace the pain. Allow yourself to feel whatever comes up and express that, whether that's crying, whether that's, you know, you may need to run. You may need to hit a tree with a baseball bat if you're angry, whatever that means. But express the feelings, and then think about like what this loss means to you. And some of the ways that are helpful for many people is to write a letter to the person. We do a lot of that at The Refuge. Just journal, you know, about our feelings, finding someone to talk to who can just listen. Continuing to think about the person, even talking to them, linking objects, like sometimes wearing a piece of clothing that your loved one used to wear, or I've seen a lot of women will wear their husband's wedding rings around their neck because it makes them feel close still, and doing things in honor of the person who died, that helps, sharing stories. Something I've known that's been very painful to people is when other people do not mention the person who died. It's almost like they never existed. Most people will say, I want to talk about, you know, the person I loved. So sharing the stories, and even something like rituals, like setting up a little altar, you know, with a person's picture and maybe a candle and some flowers and some other things that symbolize the relationship, and taking some time just to sit there and, you know, remember and feel connected. That can be a big help to people, especially early on. And just knowing that, you know, what you're going through is normal. And it always takes longer than you think it should.
Right.
Most people think they'll be done soon. And, you know, it can take a long time sometimes.
So, Cheryl, what are some things that we can do for ourselves, you know, when we're feeling, you know, when we're in the middle of this grief process and we're feeling overwhelmed? What are some things we can do to really gain some of our peace back?
I think taking time, being gentle with yourself, doing things that are good, maybe going and having a massage, taking some time out from your regular life just to be quiet, and again, talk and remember. The more we fight with our feelings, the worse they get. You know, if there's an urge to cry, I tell people, go ahead, you know, go in the bathroom, shut the door and cry, if that's, you know, but to try to push away the feelings tends to make it worse. So just, you know, being gentle with yourself, allowing yourself to do what feels right. In the beginning, it's difficult. It feels crazy-making and chaotic, and that's when you find people to talk to and just understand this is a normal human response to losing someone or something incredibly important. And if you need help, get help. Most hospices offer some support groups and different things. Often they're free to the public, so that's another possible option if you don't have a therapist you can talk to.
Now, I know that a lot of us, you know, and from my time at the refuge, I've learned that many of us do deny our feelings and we wear these masks, and you know, eventually we really kind of lose that connection between our head and our heart. And I've often heard many of our wonderful therapists there at the refuge talking about how one of the longest journeys you'll ever take is the 12 inches between your head and your heart. So you know, what are some things people can do then, maybe to notice that they're not feeling their feelings? I know that's almost, you know, an oxymoron, but, you know, I mean, what are some things people can do to kind of go, okay, I'm not dealing with this well, or, you know, do you understand what I'm asking?
I think, you know, if we can pay attention to the sensations in our body, grief is physical as well as anything else. It's like, do you have a lump? It'll come as a lump in the throat or stomach, you know, your stomach is queasy, or you're short of breath. It's like you notice those kinds of things, and then, you know, do some relaxation exercises or meditations. If you have a lump in your throat, like, pay attention to that, because if you just sit with that, sometimes that will dissolve into tears, and then the tears can come. If you've been taught as a child, it's not okay to cry, and some people were punished for crying, it may be a real challenge just to allow yourself to finally allow those feelings to come out and to cry, if that's what you need to do. But I think really it's about paying attention to what's going on. Your body will tell you, you know, oh, you know, I need to cry, or, oh, I'm really angry, and go, you know, pound pillows or go jogging or something, to, you know, whatever you need to do to release that rage that may be building up. But I think oftentimes the body is the key, because it will express what's really going on. If our head may be cut off from it, but the body knows.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a few things earlier. You know, you talked about journaling and possibly writing a letter. And I know that you have some amazing resources, and, you know, I hear about some of the amazing things that you do with our clients. And I was curious if you would share some exercises, obviously, that are safe for people to do at home, that may begin to help them work through their grief.
Well, again, I think writing a letter to the person who died can be very powerful. Just, you know, and that might include the things that, you know, not only the love, but the things that were frustrating, the things that were hurtful. You know, just getting it all out in a letter. Collaging, I mean, you know, people roll their eyes when I say collage, but, you know, finding images that express the grief that they have and, you know, putting them on paper can be very powerful, because it uses a different part of our brain. And just talking about, so exploring, like, you know, what did this loss mean to you? What are you learning about yourself from this? Those kinds of things. Or keeping a memory box. We used to do that a lot with kids. when I worked at hospice, is just, you know, having a box that they would decorate and then put different things that were little precious memories and putting them in. You know, that may sound silly, but it's not, because it's ways that we can feel connected. And a lot of times that's what we need, unless we're angry. And then it's about maybe expressing that anger so that we can even remember what was good, because usually there was some good. You know, even if there were a lot of difficult, painful things, there usually were some positive memories in there, too. And we have a better chance of getting to those if we can express the anger and the hurt.
So, you know, we're coming into the end of the program. We have, you know, just a couple of minutes left. And I wanted to kind of come back around to something we discussed earlier. And when should someone out there, when should they seek professional help, and how do they go about locating a grief counselor?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of people use the internet. You can look up specifically grief counselors on the internet. Oftentimes, as I mentioned before, hospice can be a very good source, because they may know of, they may offer some services, and they may know of people in the community that specialize in grief. And many therapists do have some grief knowledge and can help people work through things. I think in terms of when do you know that you need to reach out for help is if you're not functioning in your daily life, if you find that you can't stop, you know, dwelling on the loss,
right.
You're not eating, if your sleep is really impaired, any suicidal feelings. Sometimes people will say, I don't want to live. You know, I feel like I don't want to live, but I don't really want to kill myself. I've just lost my interest in life. And, you know, you still may want to talk to someone about that, but that happens a lot when you're grieving heavily.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Cheryl. To our listeners, if you are looking for help for yourself or someone you know, the Refuge has counselors available for a confidential phone consultation. You can call us anytime at 877-762-1811. Again, that's 877-762-8111, or visit our website at www.therefuge-ahealingplace.com.
Thanks for tuning in today to Recovery Talk. Join our expert staff members from the Refuge, A Healing Place, next Sunday to talk about treatment for alcoholism, substance abuse, trauma, or depression. We're here to help. If you need help for yourself, a loved one, or a family member, you can call 866-612-6610, 866-612-6610.